Hello, and welcome back to the Chris Yeh Podcast. I am, as always, Chris Yeh. What I have for you today is yet another installment in the Blitz Scalable Venture Deal series with Scott Johnson. This month, we're talking about the August 2021 venture deals. Enjoy. All right, it's time once again for an analysis of Blitz Scalable Venture Deals. I'm Chris Yeh of Blitz Scaling Ventures, joined by my partner, Scott Johnson. Scott, how are you doing?
Feeling good today, Chris. Always enjoy these sessions with you.
Well, today we're looking at the deals for August of 2021, and it was a pretty big crop of deals, and we've got five deals that we want to talk about, plus two extra bonus deals. So we might as well go ahead and dive right in. Our first deal is one of the higher scoring deals we've seen. What's up with this one, Scott?
Well, it's Bungalow. And anybody who remembers back when you graduated from college or you're still in college and you're trying to figure out roommates, it's a pain. It's a total hassle. It's, you know, who's got a roommate, who doesn't? Oh, I'm already good. It's very sort of ad hoc and difficult. And it's a true headache, and a headache that information technology should solve. And I think there have been a number of swings at this. Bungalow's going after it. I feel like it's time for this to actually work, that everybody's mobile, everybody's used to these matching services now that have worked in so many other areas. And so I'm kind of excited about it. And the scoring is very high. As Chris mentioned, it's a Series C round, so they're pretty far along. And it's, Andreessen's in this deal, and it's a pretty exciting company. So we're excited about talking about it today. It's winner take most for sure. I mean, think about it, right? Like you're not gonna have two of these. If you want to find a roommate, you just want one place to go where all of the other people looking for a roommate are gonna be. And that makes it kind of viral also, right? I mean, I guess, Chris, why don't you talk about virality?
Yeah, when it comes to virality, roommates are something that are inherently viral. There are major distribution channels, such as colleges, for example. People who are graduating are very much in that market. But then the other thing is that the individual communities, whether it's Brooklyn or San Francisco or Austin or what have you, the word just spreads throughout the community. And this is something that people are going to use over and over again, because they're not just going to stay with one set of roommates until they get married and buy their own house. They're probably going to move around from time to time. So there's a lot of intermix. So we really like the viral growth of distribution. I want to issue one quick correction. I think you were looking at the wrong line when you mentioned Andreessen Horowitz is in this deal. They are not. This is a Founders Fund deal, along with Coastal Ventures and Coatue as well, and a number of others.
Yeah, you're right. I guess Andreessen missed this one. They certainly are in a lot of great companies that few on this list today. There's a product market fit question here. Have they really nailed it? And we didn't actually go on the app and try to look for a roommate, so we're not really sure if they've really nailed it. It's a Series C, so they're pretty far along. They've got enough money certainly to be dangerous here, but we gave them an 8 on product market fit. I think if it was earlier stage, we'd probably give them a lower number, but they're pretty far along, so we think they're pretty close. Market size is huge. So everybody, like the whole idea that you might find a roommate, and there's a lot of opportunity to monetize around that event when you're choosing a roommate. So we think there's great opportunity for monetization here. It can be a huge business. Gross margin, once again, we are on a two-sided marketplace, and we always give a high score for gross margin when it's a two-sided marketplace. You take the take rate is the revenue, and therefore you get to keep all that. So it's a high margin business. And why don't you talk about scalability, Chris?
Yeah, so when it comes to scalability, we gave it high marks on the operational scalability side, because the beauty of this is they don't touch anything. They're not like one of our portfolio companies, Landing, where they actually have an operations challenge of furnishing apartments. This is just matchmaking. Now, the reason that we didn't give them such a great score in org scalability is that, well, when you're talking about roommates, you're talking about human relationships, you're talking about things that can be complicated and messy. And I suspect that there will be customer service complaints that come up when you have disputes between roommates. And so it will be necessary to have customer service folks. It's still pretty scalable there. We gave it an 8 out of 10. But that means that it is not quite a perfect score, but it does very well. The total score is a 94, which is one of the highest scores that we've seen. One of the reasons I like this company as well is it is a bit of a second bite at the apple. Years and years ago, I was an advisor to a company called Roomi, R-O-O-M-I, that was focused on building a marketplace for roommates. And they had some amount of success and scale, but didn't quite make it. And I always love being able to come back around and maybe get it right the second time.
Well, and, you know, other matching services have become so valuable, and we missed those too, right? I was not an early investor in Match.com. I was still in business school at the time. So there's certainly ample evidence that a good matching service is worth a lot of money. And so we're definitely interested in Bungalow.
Yeah. And next, part of this is, this is also a great trend of, hey, you know, let's take some small section of Craigslist and bite it off instead. In Craigslist, you can find rooms to rent, but it's terrible. It's a horrible experience. You have this text-based listing. You have no idea what's going on there. If you go into Bungalow and you look at one of the cities, what you see instead is, you know, how many rooms are available and how much it costs and all the statistics are already there. Are dogs okay? Are cats okay? So I just think that they've done a great job of building this out.
Yep, $75 million Series C. And if you want to check out the company yourself, it's bungalow.com, B-U-N-G-A-L-O-W. All right, moving on. Saturn Technologies is not as high scoring, but really interesting. A $44 million round, General Catalyst in here, Insight in here. It's Coatue's also in here. So certainly a high quality syndicate. And Chris, what do they do?
Well, this is really clever. What they do is they are essentially a messaging and community app focused on students, but built around schedules, class schedules, school schedules, and the like. So it just makes a ton of sense, right? People are bound by their schedules, what they're doing in period two, period three, period four, recess, lunch, you name it. And this allows them to see who's in the classes with them. It allows them to communicate with their friends while they're at school, to coordinate, to do all these different things. It's just a brilliant idea for a PEG. Most of these things, when we deal with the schools, it's typically been focused around classes and classwork. But here, it's just around the core thing itself, the schedule. And so it means that it's useful whether or not the teachers are on board, whether or not homework is integrated, and so on and so forth. There are a bunch of neat things that they can do. For example, they have a notes app built in, and all of a sudden, imagine sharing your notes on the class with the other people in the class with notes. I mean, boy, that would be a compelling reason for everyone to sign up at the school. So that's why we think it's really clever. In terms of winner take most, we didn't give it a perfect 10 out of 10. Now, the reason we pulled it down from 10 out of 10 is, if you think about it, the critical mass is really on a school-by-school basis. It is not on a global basis. And because it's on a school-by-school basis, it's kind of hyper-local. You can absolutely win a school and dominate it, but it doesn't help you dominate the next school down the road. There's only a little bit of spillover effect. And so that winner-take-most, that lack of global network effects, takes it down to 9. But within a school, it certainly can be utterly dominant once it gets to critical mass.
Good. All right. Well, so product market fit, we gave it a 7. You know, we haven't used it. We're not students. So it's a bit of a guess at 7. But these companies that are raising this amount of capital usually have a lot of traction. So the users must like something that they're experiencing. I'm sure that the network effect is kicking in. So a 7 is certainly within bounds of reasonable. Market size. How do you think about the market size here?
Yeah, you know, the market size is limited because it is really specifically a school product. School could be pretty big, but it is the school scheduling, right? It's not the core thing of the classes. It's not like something you can charge the universities to operate or anything like that. So the market is going to be a little smaller. It's not like you and I have our day divided up into periods and where there's a schedule that's shared with others at this point. So again,
exactly right.
It's something where you, as a result of being school only, it means your students, your customers age out and stop using you. Maybe it'll work for college. I kind of doubt it. It really feels like it's primarily a K-12 thing. So maybe it'd be college, but as a result, we gave it an 8 out of 10, which is still respectable, but reflects the fact that the market is limited.
Yeah, a good rule of thumb is that there are about 4 million students in the United States per grade. And if you do that math, if you only have, apply to like 4 or 8 grades, it's a lot, you know, it's tens of millions, but it's not hundreds of millions. You know, you really don't get a Facebook type upside here. So I think 8 is about the right number. And gross margin, how are we going to monetize this, Chris?
Well, you know, when you come to monetizing, that is the tricky part. Typically, it's hard to monetize education-based things, but because it's not explicitly the classes themselves, it's not like the homework assignments, I do think that you can do things like go ahead and do advertising. And of course, you know, this is why it also limits the market size, because advertising to sixth graders is not nearly as useful as advertising to high school students who have much more discretionary spending, or even better, college students.
Yep, exactly. So, you know, good gross margins, but, you know, market size, you know, that's going to be a struggle. So they get full credit for gross margin, but market size, give them an 8. Scalability, this scales. It's a web app, you know, going after the cloud. It's fine. It scales perfectly. The company reminds me a little bit of how Carta got started. They solved this really sort of simple, practical headache problem that all companies, the growing companies face, which is keeping track of your cap table when people leave, and the options over here, but then they left, did they buy them back? You know, it's just a sort of an administrative hassle that they solved elegantly. And then they built a whole lot of stuff around that and built a great business around it. And now it's an extraordinarily valuable business. And that's kind of how I think of this one. You know, it's a good hook to get in with the scheduling, but, you know, a good team will build around that, create a lot more value for the customers that they're hooking with this really nice utility. And that's where the real value in the business will occur.
Yeah, I do think that ultimately it has a blitz scalable score. The size of the win is limited because of the fact that it has to focus on students, right? I can imagine there would be things where there would be large amounts of money being spent on summer camp and whatnot, but many of those decisions are made by the parents, and the parents aren't going to be using this app per se. So in the end, again, I love the idea. I think it's going to be successful. I think it's going to have people using this. I just don't know if it is going to end up being a big win. But, you know, that being said, not everything is going to be a gigantic Amazon. The world still needs its mere $10 and $20 billion exits.
Yes, it does. Very well put. Okay, let's move on from Saturn and talk about Royal. It's, you know, we've seen in past podcasts, you've heard us talk about how they're selling shares of, using the blockchain basically to sell shares of any asset you can think of. So our works of art or real estate or playing, card collectors selling little pieces of playing cards. And so why not music? And that's where this one's really cool. It's a seed round. So it's super early, but Founders Fund is part of the seed round. And that's 16 million. So it's kind of a big seed round. Like, what's a seed round anymore? 16 million, my gosh. And there's like 100 million, $500 million seed rounds these days. So the definitions are getting a little stretched. But in this case, you know, this is the first sort of large bunch of money they've taken. So it's pretty early. And Chris, why don't you tell us what they're actually doing?
Yeah, so what Royal does, and it's a nice play on words, is that it allows you to buy ownerships in songs directly from the artists who create and record them, and earn royalties when the artist earns money with the song. So it is also kind of an investment, and it's a live asset. Now, the reason I think that this is so cool is it makes sense also from a non-financial perspective. So we've looked at a lot of these deals where it's art, where it is baseball cards or other kinds of memorabilia, all these different things. Yeah, those are great. But in the case of an artist, if you sell off a portion of the revenue stream from your song to some fans, those fans are fans for life. That is a deeper relationship. They're going to be super duper loyal. This is an incredible marketing platform as well as a financial platform. I can't imagine why artists would not want to do this, because it's a great way to really lock people in. So that's why I like it so much.
Well, and we not gave only it a that, but they're emotional about it. Like,
yes,
owning a piece of every song on Abbey Road. I mean, they're going to this stuff is going to sell for way more than the cash flow would justify. It's almost like an NFT that way. So
exactly.
I think this is a really, really exciting idea.
And it's brilliant. If you're an artist and you can sell your royalty stream for more than it's worth, that's a lot better than collecting the royalties. I mean, it's alchemy from a financial standpoint. So I love that.
Exactly. Yes.
So we gave it really high scores. We gave it a 10 out of 10 in winner take most, because obviously it's like any sort of stock market or exchange. You want to go where the greatest liquidity is. So absolutely 10 out of 10. Viral growth or distribution. The artists are going to promote it themselves, and they promote it to the listeners. I mean, hell, artists are going to start recording songs saying, the classic Lord song, you want to be royals, right? You want to be royal. You want royalties on my song? Buy this song. And people will actually be using Royal to buy royalty streams on songs about royalties. So that will be something that is really remarkable. We gave it a
gift.
9 out of 10. You know, not, it's not quite 10. 9's pretty good.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's not inherently viral, where when as soon as you do it, then other people see that you did it and therefore do it themselves. So it's not quite that.
But people are going to brag the hell out of this. I mean, let's face it. This is all about the status. So that's why we gave it a good score.
Product market fit, you know, it's a seed round. So we gave it a 7. We figure they're not there yet. But who knows? I mean, it's just the concept is, you know, pretty great. So maybe we're being a little conservative there. But, you know, they still make the hurdle. The final score, by the way, is 83. So they're certainly going to be blitzscalable in the end. But the product market fit, we're being a little conservative. And market size, we're being a little conservative. You know, only an 8, it could be a 9. I think we could up it to 9. I we'd have to do some analysis to really understand what their take is, and therefore, you know, what the overall size of the royalty streams are from songs, and their, you know, and then sort of back it out and get to a valuation, but or potential value in a total available market. But you know, it could be higher than 8.
Yeah. And by the way, you know, let's put in the broader perspective of the financialization of music. So one of the interesting things that you and I remember, Scott, is when they first started offering up the Bowie bonds. So bonds that were backed by the royalties from David Bowie's song catalog. This became a way for David Bowie to cash in on his own catalog. And that is both an illustration of what's really powerful about Royal, right? That's the super high end. Royal brings that and democratizes it for everyone. But it does raise the question, well, would you be able to do something like that? Would David Bowie have been able to pull that off if he'd been using Royal all along? Maybe, maybe not. I think Royal, you're only selling off a portion of the songs. And by the way, it takes a lot to get to the David Bowie level. So I think most people are going to be fine just sticking with Royal.
Yeah, and it's a way to speculate on an artist too. If you're an up-and-coming artist and they want to sell, you know, like half the royalties to one of their better songs, but they're up-and-coming, and then, you know, you can buy that at that time and support that artist. And then when they become, you know, it's super famous and the royalty streams really ramp up, then you get to participate in that. So you don't just say, oh yeah, I knew about that band way before they were popular. You could say, I knew about that band way before they were popular. I bought in and now I'm cashing, you know, big checks every month. So it's, I just think you mentioned earlier, it brings fans closer to their artist. And I think it lets them take advantage if they really think they have insight.
I do also think there might be a funny contrarian play in investing in the artists that people despise. You can imagine like a mutual fund and all the people in the fund. We've got the royalties on Vanilla Ice. We've got the royalties on Nickelback. We've got the royalties on Rebecca Black. And because people are so disgusted with those songs, they actually are underpriced, and it might be a good way to actually make money.
Yeah, and then you know, you might be able to find derivatives on this market or short sellers. There's a lot of things that it's just a stock market, so you can do it. All those things that are creative are on the financial side. So it's tens the rest of the way. You know, gross margin, of course, scalability. It gets all tens. So the final score, as I said, was an 83. But, you know, I think our excitement level is higher than an 83 because it's just so cool and so innovative. And it does have that really solid 10 at winner take most.
And the thing to remember about us at Blitzscaling Ventures is what we do is we look for companies that score at that 80 or above mark. We don't distinguish. We don't discriminate and say, well, you know, of course, we like the ones with the very high scores. But once it gets above that threshold, you know, it's fair game for us to look at all of them, and it's very reasonable to prefer the ones we think are more interesting. Let's face it, we're going to spend a lot of time with these companies over the years if we invest, and we'd much rather do it with companies that we find interesting and people we find interesting.
Well, and really great entrepreneurs, and we can't tell that from afar, right? So we have to meet with these companies. We have to really, really understand the people behind it. It's such a big factor in how well they do in the long run. All right, balance.
We're going to talk about Pintu briefly, and then we'll talk about
Pintu. Yes.
Yeah. So Pintu is a crypto assets platform. It's a classic kind of crypto wallet for selling various Bitcoin and other blockchain related assets. And you may be asking yourself, what? Yet another one of these? Why would you guys even bring this up? And the answer is that Pintu is the leader in its market over in Indonesia. And the fact is, within exchanges, geography and language still matter to a certain extent. It's not the same thing as trading commodities, regulatory environments, right? There's a reason why you just can't go every single place in the world. And so we added them to our list because they definitely qualify as this kind of crypto wallet. They have a strong winner-take-most score. Virality and distribution is okay, not great. Product market fit, pretty good. Market size, we dinged them a little bit, brought them down to a 9 because, you know, let's face it, it's not like they're going to be able to expand and displace Coinbase, right? Yeah. They're focused on the Indonesian market. But guess what? Indonesia is a big place and it's a huge emerging market, and the rest of Southeast Asia is there as well. So that gave Pintu overall an 82. We're definitely taking a look at it, but we just didn't want to dwell too much on it because we've seen this before and it works. And it's mainly a question of, is the market big enough?
Moving on to Balance, that I jumped ahead a little bit just a minute ago. It's getbalance.com if you want to look it up. And we have a $25 million Series A. This is an Israeli company. And we've got Lightspeed in here, and that's why it hit our radar. And it's digital payments. It's kind of Stripe for B2B. Is that how you describe it, Chris?
I think that's the perfect way of describing it. And by the way, Stripe is also an investor in the company, so that tells you something. So those of you who are familiar with B2B payments, this is things like purchase orders and invoices and all this stuff where you just can't do the simple thing of putting something on a credit card. And so there is a much greater need for some sort of simplified system for payments for B2B transactions. And that's what Balance is bringing to the table. Now, it is not a perfect thing from a winner-take-most or viral growth or distribution standpoint. On the winner-take-most side, yeah, it's helpful, but you can always transact in the old way. There's a series of incumbents. It's not like this is creating a brand new market. It's just taking an existing market and making it easier. So we don't give it a 10 out of 10. We give it a 9 out of 10. Viral growth and distribution, same thing. It's going to be pretty good because there will be companies who will just say, listen, you're going to use Balance to pay us. That's just it. And that will help on the distribution side.
So it's like Crossbeam now. So you're a business and you have to pay through Balance. You're like, oh, that was good. I'm going to use this to charge all my customers. So unless you're just purely B2C, if you're B2B and then you're also, you know, it's your part of that supply chain that's all B2B all the way up and down, then it's going to be viral. So I think the distribution is quite good.
Yeah. And we gave them a 9 out of 10 on that as well. So we got 2 9s, which is usually a pretty good start. Product market fit, still very early on. The website doesn't say a lot. We had to give them a 7 just because we just don't know more. Market size, enormous, absolutely enormous. As we described, this is probably even an order of magnitude bigger than the consumer payments market. It's colossal. Gross margin, scalability for organization operations, also very high because this is a purely financial product. That ends up with a total of 81 out of 100. And this is another one where it crosses the threshold. I think we're very excited about it.
So what do you think Slack would have gotten when they did their Series A, if we'd scored it?
Well, if we did Slack when we did Series A, I think that it would probably end up in the low 90s. So
what's the difference?
Well, the difference is, are you saying Slack or are you saying Stripe?
I'm sorry, Stripe.
Okay, so that's different. Stripe would have also scored down in this range. And the reason is it doesn't have, Slack obviously would score high because it has winner take most, virality, market size, grow. I mean, all those things we talk about. Stripe would not score as well. Stripe is a great example of something where, our assessment of Blitz scalability takes into account the overall business model. But there's a level of detail to how Stripe worked that other people didn't appreciate. Obviously, there are plenty of ways to accept payments before Stripe. And it was simply that the Collison brothers built out a platform that made it easier for developers to integrate, that made it just a little bit better to use Stripe as a mechanism. And those little tiny edges multiplied out time after time after time allowed them to eventually become the most valuable public, privately held company, privately held startup in the world. So, I mean, I tip my cap. Patrick is an amazing guy, super, super brainy and intelligent, really thoughtful, came to our class at Stanford to speak back in 2015. Boy, does that look like a prescient call right there. Having Brian Chesky come and speak, those were pretty awesome. And I think that, you know, it just goes to show you, you can have a relatively low blitzscaling score and still be one of the more successful blitzscalers of our era.
Exactly. So, you know, it's the score isn't predictive of the outcome. The score is just a means of saying, well, let's pay attention to this one. It scored above 80 and then evaluate the business from there.
Okay. There are two more that we wanted to talk about in brief that did not make the cut for a variety of reasons, but we did want to talk about them quickly. The first is called Polywork. Polywork is promising to be a different kind of professional social network. And of course, if you can create a new social network, that can be enormously valuable. But as we've discussed, there is a clear 800-pound gorilla problem that Polywork has, and it's called LinkedIn. And how are you going to be able to take on LinkedIn when it's already won the market? And that is one of the things about the Blitz Scalability Index. It does not capture whether or not someone has already won the market. And until we learn more about what Polywork does, it's difficult to ascertain whether or not they are different enough from LinkedIn, whether it is a different enough market for them to have an opportunity.
Yeah, it's got to be a lot different, right? I mean, you can't just walk out tomorrow and say, hey, Chris, you know, let's start a stock exchange. People should be able to trade stocks, you know, just like NASDAQ. Why don't we start one? And you better have a really good reason why you want to start a stock exchange, because there are two that are dominant and have network effects that are insurmountable. So this is why we didn't include Polywork. It got a high score, but the winner take most already happened. And so, no, we're not going to look at that. What's the next one?
XMTP. And this is an interesting one because we actually debated about this quite a bit and we ended up concluding that we could not include it. So what XMTP is doing is they're creating a crypto native communication protocol. It's obviously a play on XMPP, for example. And having an open crypto native communication protocol will make it easier to communicate with wallets, for wallets to communicate with each other, for token holders to do various things. So there's all these things that may become easier on the crypto side when you use XMTP. And of course, they are backed by Andreessen Horowitz's crypto fund, I believe. So that's a great endorsement there. But the debate we had about this was, what is the actual market size? Is it that it's going to help crypto communicate with each other? Will it be good for general communications? It means that it's heavily dependent on the ultimate size of the crypto market.
It is. And so, you know, crypto is its own world. And Andreessen Horowitz seems to just really be focused on that and just leaning into it heavily, and DeFi and all the it's just a fascinating time we're living through right now. But you know, is it big enough? Is it big enough to support, you know, a transport protocol that's kind of open source? So we'll see, you know. Yeah. It's a really interesting thing to watch.
It absolutely could be, but it's dependent on things that are outside the control of the makers of XMTP, right? I mean, this has always been the argument for crypto. Let's say crypto ends up being, you know, 30% of the economy. Oh my God, that's colossal. But what if it ends up declining and becoming a niche thing that only drug dealers use? Well, that's not nearly as valuable. So there's a gigantic range of potential outcomes, and just a little too high. We just don't have the ability to agree on the scores and say, okay, this is definitely blitzscalable. So it's not on the list, but certainly something that we are going to continue to watch. So that looks like that's it for the month of August. So that's five different deals that we went over: Bungalow, Saturn, Royal, Pinto, and Balance, plus two bonus companies that we discussed. And that's very in keeping with the volume that we've been seeing. We've been seeing in that 150 deal range, about five of them being blitz scalable. So I'm looking forward to seeing what September brings. I mean, people often talk about August doldrums. Do you think that September is going to be busier than August?
Yeah, probably. I think it's quite likely. Even though August was super busy. And one last thing before we sign off, I didn't give the URLs for all these deals, just a couple of them. So Saturn, you'll find at joinsaturn.com. Royal, you'll find at royal.io. And Pinto is at pinto.co.
.id.
.id.
All right, Scott, thank you as always for coming in for this. Really appreciate the wisdom and the wit as well. And hopefully you guys have enjoyed this edition of Blitz Scalable Venture Deals. I'm Chris Yeh on behalf of Scott Johnson. We'll see you next month.